Welcome to For the Love of Books, Bee's Books Edition, a podcast by North Lanarkshire Libraries.
Hi, this is Betty.
And this is Jenny. And we're here to talk about
Bee's books. So I'm actually quite excited about the theme this time around, which also seems to be a library annual theme,
as you've
declared.
Yes.
It's space. Space. So, which has a lot of interpretations.
It does, yes.
It could be like you're taking up a lot of space.
Yes.
I need some space, which some people in that we know we could say we need space.
Yes.
What else? I don't know. But I think, like, from what I know of your book, that is nothing. But I know you were super excited about it, and you said it was a pretty direct interpretation of space, not like a sneaky trying to make it fit in.
Yeah.
And mine's a pretty direct interpretation of space.
Okay.
Both of mine. So we didn't try to hoodwink me this time around.
I'm sure she'll be slightly disappointed,
yeah,
actually.
I know, we've held ourselves up to a higher standard, and now we've just like, we're just normal now. We're boring.
Yeah.
So it's the 25th episode, isn't it? I think
it is, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like a long-term relationship now.
We know it is, yeah.
Yes.
So what books have you chosen?
I can see
them in the distance.
I have two books. The first is called The Universe in Your Hand, which sounds like the title of a self-help book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, if you do this, you'll have the whole universe in your hand. It's not. It's A Journey Through Space, Time and Beyond.
Oh.
And it's by Christoph Galford. So it's a science-y book. It's non-fiction. Oh, you look very worried. I will convince you otherwise when I tell you more about it. And the other one is a science fiction book, also set in space in the future. It's called The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers. It's a standalone book, the first standalone book in a series called the Wayfarers series, which I love. It's very poetic, Wayfarers.
Oh.
But it's all, yeah, it's set in like the distant future and in space.
Oh, excellent.
Okay. So very space.
So I have two books as well. And my first one is called The Mars House.
Oh, I love that cover.
Beautiful cover,
very
isn't
nice,
it?
Yeah.
So The Mars House by Natasha Pooley, whom I love. But I've also, slightly weird, The Aquanaut by Stan, I can't read upside down, Santat, which is a graphic novel, people. I read
like
a graphic novel.
Scandal, horror.
And I've made notes on
this
graphic novel.
Wow.
So I'm quite excited to talk about these.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm extra excited because I think this is your first graphic novel.
It is, yes.
And the cover, it was, you literally judged it by its cover.
I absolutely did.
Yeah,
yes.
And it worked, you know. So.
And it's a lovely cover. It is a lovely cover.
So tell me about the book that you were most excited about. Or not most excited about in among these two, but that you were excited about and you kept telling me, oh, I'm in the middle of reading this book and I'm so excited to talk about it.
That was Natasha Pooley.
Okay.
But I'm going to talk about the other one first.
Okay.
Offer
a suggestion.
Sorry.
That determined.
Because I have notes.
That's how we roll.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wow. You have like copious
notes. I might not look at them.
Okay.
But because the people at home cannot see the cover at the moment, it's called The Aquanaut.
Yep.
And on the front is a kind of body with an old-fashioned underwater helmet thing. Help me out here.
Diving helmet?
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And inside...
Like steampunky.
Yes, yes. And it does have a slight feel of that too. But inside this helmet are some sea creatures.
Yeah.
So, the book. It is about, basically, at the beginning, there is a crash, a boat sinks and somebody is on the boat and they pass away. And then the rest of the book is basically about his daughter and his brother and what's happened to them in the meantime, because her uncle is basically looking after her now that her father has passed away.
Right.
Sounds quite depressing, I have to say.
Yeah, and it's not what the cover promises.
No, it's not. But basically what happens is it's a research vessel. And the people on board the vessel are kind of doing research into animals and, not animals.
Underwater.
Yes, thank
you.
And kind of researching this.
Oh,
and they have
a
kind of research institute, which this, you know, I think it is 5 years later. Basically, this has now become a sort of theme park because they've had to make money, I'm assuming, because they lost money on the boat sinking and things like that. So it's more of a theme park than a research institute.
Right. I bet the researchers loved that.
No, exactly. So the uncle's not happy about this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people kind of wanting to invest money and they're wanting something big and flashy. So instead of researching animals, animals are getting used slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter, who I've completely forgotten the name of, and I do apologise.
That's
fine. Sophia. Mm-hmm. She kind of skips school quite a lot, and she's not like totally invested in her education.
Can't relate. Yes. I was a huge nerd.
And basically, she hardly ever sees her uncle because he's always like, you know, trying to keep the business alive, kind of a thing. However, the whole point of it is this aquanaut. So on board the research vessel, there were some animals that we were kind of studying, and they seem to have become kind of, you know, they kind of understand, they can read and kind of understand the world. And so they decide, because they know about this research institute and it's quite a safe place, as it was before, you know, when they were doing the research, they've decided they want to go there because they're all quite, not endangered species, but there's not many of them around.
Okay.
So they find this old fashioned diving suit at the bottom of the sea, and they make it work as a human. So they kind of do mechanics and things, and they make the body move while they're kind of living in the helmet. And they go to the land, which they call space, because to them, the underwater is their world, and anything above the water is space. And obviously they get to the research institute and discover it's not what it, you know, was supposed to be, and they're not happy about it. And then Sophia finds out that they're in this suit and it's not a real person. And it just kind of goes on from there. And it has a happy ending.
Okay.
But what I liked about it, which is always what I said I didn't like about graphic novels, was there's quite a lot of your imagination put into the story, because it's all about the pictures and small amount of words.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get the idea, but you kind of fill in the blanks without even realising you're filling in the blanks because of the pictures.
Yeah.
So I kind of get now why you why you like them. I'm not saying I'm going to become addicted to them.
Well, I mean, you just needed the right book.
Yes, yes.
And it, like, because I think, so you'd shown me the illustrations, a few of them from, like, just when you decided to, like, pick it up, and it looked gorgeous. Like, it's definitely the kind of book I'd want to read. But I'm really interested in knowing, how was your experience like of reading?
So I read it in one go as well, sneakily on my lunch hour, and maybe slightly more time than that, which I also enjoyed, because I could just read it in one go, because it's not, although it's quite a thicker book, if you know what I mean, than some graphic novels, it's still manageable. And because I read it in one go, I felt that was better than like a normal book where you would stop at the end of a chapter and come back to it. And I just loved everybody in it. The illustrations are fantastic. And as I say, because sometimes you're filling in the spaces, you know, your imagination can do what you want it to do, if that makes sense. So it might not be what Dan decided was going to happen, but in my head, you know, I filled in the blanks in particular ways.
And it gives you sort of visual cues, I guess, and then the actors prompts for something bigger if you want, or something more.
Exactly.
So it's like sort of a mix between books and movies, almost.
And it is a very kind of accessible way. And not just for kids.
Absolutely.
So I want to tell you a wee bit about some of the characters. So we've got, they've all got very cool names, which Dan does go on to tell you why they're called that. But we've got Carlos, who is the engineer, and he seems to be a kind of octopusy kind of animal, but not. I shall show you a picture so that you can see at the top there. And then we've got Antonio, that is a blanket octopus, which was cool. We've also got
Jobim. A Ridley Sea Turtle.
Yes.
A Kemp's Ridley Sea Turtle. I thought that was just the olive. Who's Kemp?
I don't know. And we've also got Soda Pop, who is a kind of crab, but he's got a soda can as his shell rather than a natural shell. And there's a story behind that that you find out a wee bit as well. And at the back, it does kind of give you, you know, kind of wee explanations about some things, you know, inside jokes kind of a thing, which I thought was quite good. And it does have, which I'm glad of, a nice ending. But there was one picture I wanted to show you, which I obviously did not mark, and I apologise. And I'm never going to find it now. But there's a few pages that are kind of a whole picture on one page, as opposed to three bits. And a lot of that is blank. But again, that kind of helps you fill the gaps.
And it's also like a good sort of stopping point. Like, can you imagine the amount of work it must have taken to produce this?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Like, and it's so much better, right? Like, you showed me the characters, and if they'd been described versus you seeing them come alive, it's such a difference. And like, both obviously have their benefits, but in this kind of book with these kind of creatures and characters, I think it completely just like brings it alive in a whole different way.
And it's a lovely story, basically. You know, they try and rescue the animals that are kind of in, and you know, the evil investor who looks like an evil investor. I mean, he absolutely does.
The moustache twirling villain.
You know, he's trying to put a stop to it because he just wants to make money and all this kind of stuff. There's a wee bit about her, you know, at school, and she's trying to do a project. And she's basically left at the last minute because she's not caring. And she thought her uncle could come in and talk about his research, but he's so busy trying to, you know, pacify the evil investor. But she takes the Aquanaut in, and basically, you know, it can't speak or anything, but, you know, it kind of does things to help her along with the project, and the teacher's very taken on.
Has it opened your mind up to graphic novels then?
It has, yes. I would read especially something by this author again, just to kind of see where he goes.
I would also be interested if you'd like Nimona, because you loved the movie, and the book is older, obviously, and it's slightly different. Like, the movie makes, like, even though, you know, it's like Nimona was only written like 10 or so years ago, so it's relatively modern, but it was like the movie updated it even more. So you'd still have things that are a bit newer, a bit different, but it's already a familiar world that you already like. So maybe this is a whole new world opening up to you.
Maybe.
Well,
I did very much enjoy it.
Oh, I'm glad. So I'll tell you about The Universe in Your Hand first, because that's the one that scared you the most.
Yes, absolutely.
So this is a book that I read a few years ago. I think it came out in 2016, maybe 2015. So the science in it is like already 10 years old. Christoph Galford, he is a like sort of scientist. Like, he worked under Stephen Hawking. Like, that was his sort of professor. So like a big deal.
He has a kind of professor name. If you know what I mean.
But now he doesn't do research anymore. Yeah. So his whole now sort of goal, I guess, mission in life seems to have become to translate and communicate scientific ideas to people who are not necessarily within the scientific community, and to make science exciting and alive and accessible to them. And I love this book. So I'm rereading it again, and I'm halfway through. When I first read it, I completely loved it. I wish there was a second thing, much like Tamsin Muir, you know, like we want a sequel. Because even in the last 10 years, I'm sure so many new discoveries have been made. That is very different to reading a book, like the kind of storyteller that he is, than like a journal article or like a... just like a newspaper article. So he's just like, I think, the best person to kind of write this kind of book. I was not very good at science in school, just because I didn't find it really interesting. And amongst the three sciences, so biology, physics, chemistry, biology was the one that I was least like afraid of, because it still felt real, whereas physics and chemistry just felt too out of the thing. This book is fully about physics and chemistry. It's about space. It's about all the sort of things that humans have discovered. But he writes it in such a, like, you know, like, I wish he was my teacher. He does feel like a teacher a little bit in this, in that in the beginning he says, like, just in the sort of foreword, that before we start, there are two things I would like to share with you. The first is a promise. The second is an ambition. The promise is that the book contains only one equation. Excellent. Here it is, E equals MC square. So he's, you know, sort of like, he's like a really friendly guide to science. And he explains things. So he, you know, like makes, like uses examples and things in a way. And like, he's a storyteller. So it's a fantastic narrative. But he does it in a way that you actually do understand. So all these like chemistry, like chemical equations, physical sort of theories and things that in school, or even now, like if a scientist told me these things, I would be like, sure, that sounds interesting, but I don't understand. In this case, it's interesting. I understand. Mm-hmm. And it's also just, I was left awestruck. It fills you with this sense of awe and wonder mm-hmm. about what humans have discovered, like in the world and how it's always changing, like it's always shifting, and how much there is left to discover. So, you know, he keeps saying, like, he mentions obviously scientists' names and things, but that's not the point mm-hmm. of it. Yeah. But he even says that you have, like, every sort of few chapters, he'll be like, you now know as much as scientists have worked for the last 100 years mm-hmm. trying to figure out, or that last 200 years or whatever. And he does it in a way that doesn't make it seem intimidating. Mm-hmm. And the last chapter, I remember, like the last section from last time, I've not reached it yet so far, is so all this is like stuff that's known now about the past, the universe's past, so space's past, the mm-hmm. present. The last chapter is like theoretical physics. Mm-hmm. So it's like ideas that are not completely, we've not proven them, mm-hmm. but like different scientists have these theories, and he compares it to like scientists are like, they have such good imaginations, like artists, mm-hmm. because you have to make these imaginative leaps mm-hmm. to, you know, sort of explore what if this was what it was, what if black holes are actually gateways to the multiverse, mm-hmm. what if you can like time travel, some scientists think you can time travel like into the future but not into the past, like all these things, mm-hmm. he makes it so exciting and alive that I wish I could time travel, you know, with him yeah. by my side, just to figure out like how the world is going to look like. So it's basically like a biography of space, mm-hmm. this. But also about, I think, humans sort of understanding and evolving uh-huh. understanding. So it's both about the big vastness of the cosmos, but also like the human's role in like understanding it, and also like how it's evolved. Like people have been burned for suggesting things that we take for granted now, like mm-hmm. they've been killed. And he just, like, I don't even think I'm doing a good job representing how much I love this book.
No, I think you are.
He's just like fantastic. And they're also like small, so they're like these big overarching themes and chapters, but each chapter is about like 5 to 10 pages long, so it's not an intimidating thing. I think the way he's framed everything is to try and make people as excited about science as he is. Mm-hmm. So I 100% recommend this book to anybody who's interested in space and learning about science in a way that won't make you scared. Like, even if you hated science in school or you were afraid of science, mm-hmm. this would make you be like, oh, I now see why people are interested in science. It's just a fantastic
book. I think that's the thing. When you learn about these things at school, you're learning equations mm-hmm. and, you know, formulas that basically you're just memorising so you can put them down in a test.
Absolutely.
If it's taught in a different way mm-hmm. to make you excited about it, you're more likely to learn
yeah.
And be interested in it.
And like to contextualise it with your like day-to-day life, right? Mm. So the coolest thing I learned on my train ride over today, I was reading this book like on my way here, gold. You know, like the sort of the material, the metal gold. It's formed when stars die. So, like, it's from the insides of the stars dying, and that's how gold has reached, like, it has traveled millions and billions of miles to reach Earth in the core, and that's what you mine, and that's what you wear. Like, you're just wearing gold jewelry and thinking, like, and mm-hmm. I have not really been a gold person, just because that, the metal seems like there's, like, a whole South Asian people are obsessed with gold, and that's put me right off, you know, because, like, I grew up. But that idea that it's gold is forged in a star's death, Like, that's what I mean. Okay. Like, he writes with so much poetry and with so much compassion and with so much, you know, just friendliness,
mm-hmm.
that you're you're looking at the world in a different way, like about gravity as well. So this is, I'm going to be quick, but it made me think of like what we do at BookBug and Tiny mm-hmm. Tales, which is a very strange comparison, right? So, you know, the Lycra that we use mm-hmm. in BookBug. So if you put like a heavy object in the center, and then you put lighter objects, like it would dip down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then if you put like lighter objects around, like our robot finger puppets or something, the heavier object, like they'd all like go towards the sort of the big like ball, maybe if we put a big like heavy ball. And that's gravity. That's so like that Lycra is the fabric of space-time, which sounds so poetic in like the way that he sounds.
I like it because the Lycra is very sparkly. Exactly.
Yeah,
so
it's like space. So, and its relationship with the Earth and the Moon is basically, so like Earth is like that ball in the Lycra,
mm-hmm.
and the Moon is like sort of, but the Moon is also heavy, but not as heavy. So they're both sort of like influencing each other.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the Earth is like drawing the Moon in close, but the Moon is also influencing the tides on Earth, and that's why the tides move according to the Moon cycles, which I thought was like, oh my god, I didn't know. Like, and maybe I did know this, maybe mm-hmm. in a textbook in a science classroom, somebody said this, oh, the Moon influences the tides, but the way he envisions it is just amazing.
Ah.
So yes. So.
You have definitely sold that one.
Yeah, fully recommend. Yeah,
oh,
I just wish he had like a second book, because I'm so excited to know what new discoveries have happened in the last 10 years, and I want him to tell me. I don't want anybody else.
And do you know, is that a thing that's going to happen? Or
No, I tried investigating, but this seems to be his only book, which is quite a travesty, mm-hmm. I must say, for us non-scientific people.
Maybe he's waiting, though, for like the prime opportunity.
Maybe.
You know, maybe it needs to be 15 years or 20
maybe.
Years.
Maybe.
You know, to make the big
because,
splash.
Like, especially the last chapters, from what I remember from last time, it just sounded like science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the kinds of things that scientists are imagining for what it could, what discoveries could happen. But then 100 years ago, the things that they imagined would have seemed like science fiction, but we take it for granted now.
Even less than that, you know, 20 years ago, there's things now that,
yeah.
you know, people talk to people on their watches, you know, 20
yeah,
years ago,
absolutely.
It would be like, what?
Absolutely. It makes you excited for the future of humanity.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
What about your other book? I'm interested in that as well, because it's a science fiction.
Yes, so this is actually, it's also about people, strangely enough. It both these books make me fall in love with people. Like, I love people anyway, but it's just so this, I'm not a science fiction reader, so it was kind of an unusual book for me to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the audiobook version helps. So this one, the one that we have, is like a print book, but I listen to an audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, science fiction scares me a little bit as well, I think, especially when it's hard sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
So they're using all these hard scientific terms and like technologies, and like I'm like, oh, I don't know, like you're not presenting to me as Christoph, my friend, does in an accessible way. But this is not really about that. There is some technology that's like explained, but it's essentially about the people. It's
mm-hmm.
a very character driven book, and I'm usually a plot driven person. Like, I love like plots moving ahead.
Mm-hmm.
This one's about a spaceship. And it's like this human from Mars, like she was born on Mars because it's like in the distant future. She's joined this spaceship as like a new employee. And this spaceship is full of beings from different worlds. Like, there's like a few humans, but also like there's this reptilian creature, another creature who communicates like emotions through their colors. The skin changes colors. Yeah, there's just like a bunch of these different things. And it almost feels like a travelogue. Like, there is some like action, but very little. Like, it's not a conflict heavy book. It's mostly about them. So they're trying to build a hyperspace tunnel through the part of space that's governed by this their union, like the union of different cultures and worlds, to like a war-torn sort of thing, who they're trying to get on. So it sounds a bit Star Trek-y, who they're trying to get on their side, like to join the union sort of thing. But it's still a really dangerous mission. But it takes a year for them to reach this space, to draw this hyperspace tunnel. So they're visiting different worlds, meeting different people, you know, like finding out about different, and because we see it through her eyes, Rosemary's eyes, she's also discovering this all anew. And it's just like, it feels like a really gentle travelogue into the future. Like, you know, you're just like hanging out with people, and it's a lot about like the people on the ship. They're all from different species, all have different cultural contexts and things, but they're figuring out how to live together. So it's almost like a family or like a gang of really like friends who may not always get along, mm-hmm. but they're in it together. And it was just a lovely book, and it's a standalone, so it doesn't end. Like, there's different kinds of, like, so, you know, like, I like the politics and the social aspects of it, so that's what I could read into it, because there's like this sentient AI, like the robot called Lovelace, on who's a character, mm-hmm. but the rest of the galaxy doesn't see her as a, like, alive or as a person because of the rights and things. Mm-hmm. But there's stuff like that, but also for people who just want to, you know, like, hang out in space with a potential future. It was just lovely. And, like, the audiobook version, I think, really helped with that, because I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, visiting a foreign land sort of thing. And, yeah, so there is, like, a plot, but it's a very loose plot. It's more about the people.
It sounds a little bit like, and I've completely forgot the title and have been trying to dredge it up for the last few minutes and I can't, but the Douglas Adams book.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And that there's
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
But there's different people on board that ship from different backgrounds,
yeah.
and how they get along. It sounded a wee bit like that.
Yeah, I mean, Douglas Adams is much, it's more comedic, like, it's comedy is the thing. Whereas here, she seems like, Becky Chambers seems really interested in the people dynamics. Like, and anyway, you know, we work in a library that has different people, different strengths, different weaknesses, different personalities, and how you coexist together. And she has a very optimistic view of the future, which is what I really love. Humans here are really like, not even second class citizens. Like, they're not really respected by the treaty, because in this book, the past, humans have almost killed off that planet, which we're, you know, currently on the track.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah. So they're like, how could you do that? How could you, like, so they think of us as babies, like, in the civilizational term. So we're still like new members, and like, we're not treated like, there are other senior members who are like, look at us as children. And it was interesting to look at it from that perspective as
that's
well.
It's quite funny, because we do think of ourselves as like way up there, you know, and if we met aliens, obviously they would be slightly inferior to us, or they would be so far advanced that they wouldn't even know we exist, you know. But to see it from the other side, that the humans are, you know, that not as
absolutely, that's what I really liked. And it was like, because we joined this union, I forget what it's called, but because we joined this union, we had access to resources and jobs that we wouldn't have if we just stuck to our little corner of the, you know, sort of the solar system. Mm-hmm. But because we made these connections and compromises and sort of reached out to people and other beings, that's what helped our survival, and that's what's helping us thrive. And I just love that sort of picture of like humanity's future.
It sounds fairly similar to my book.
Oh, lovely. I can't wait
in a different
hear.
way.
Okay.
So I love Natasha Pulley. She did The Watchmaker of Filigree Street, which is a fabulous book, and if you haven't read it, please read it. And what she does is she takes something very familiar and makes it slightly different. So it starts out in London, and it feels like it's now, although I think it's not quite now, but there are floods, there are fires in America, all this kind of stuff. Obviously the environment's went and has turned,
so like a prequel to
so our main guy, January his name is, is the and I'm going to sneak a wee look here, principal dancer, I can't remember the word, of the
oh, that's not where I thought you were going at all.
Of London's Royal Ballet.
I see.
He's like the premier at the moment. They're doing the Snow King or something he's going to be. So he's the principal in this thing. You know, he's very well respected. He basically, London though is sinking. So what if you lived in London now? A lot of that was underwater, and they take rich people on like diving tours to see London, you know, underground London, which sounds fantastic. You know, I would like to go in with those tours. But at the beginning of the book, he's, you know, you're kind of aware that the water is rising, but then it happens very quickly. So basically, they're in preparing for a show, and basically, you know, 2 weeks later, you know, they're all stranded, and, you know, they've got no food left and all this kind of stuff. So the water very quickly has risen. So they're used to it rising, you know, quite slowly, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's happened. So basically they're homeless, you know, they've got, you know, he doesn't know what to do. And the people that take him in, you know, all the kind of good people that kind of help with refugees and things, basically says, well, you know, you could go to this country, but the moment they're at war with this country, you know, you could go here, okay, or you could go to Mars. So
yeah. Yes, that's always an option.
You're guaranteed a job, you're guaranteed housing, you could go to Mars. It will take you a year to get there, but you could go. So January's thinking, well, you know, that's probably the best option for me. So away he goes. So you learn that basically 250 years before this is set, and as I say, it's very familiar, but no.
It's a near future.
They have sent off to Mars to terraform it, to make it habitable, because basically humans are a bit rubbish and they are destroying their planet as an alternative place to go. And what they need is humans, Earth humans, to come and do some of the work. So he goes there. And then it skips to like a 2 years, so he's been a year on the ship to get there, and he's a year in this job. And it's fascinating how Natasha's made made Mars. So basically their gravity is different than ours, as we know, and the humans are basically three times stronger than anybody on Mars. So there's 250 years they've had, so there's what they call naturals who have kind of evolved, and you know, they've been born on Mars. And they're very tall because of the gravity. They kind of, everything's really taller, but they're not as strong. They don't have, like, so basically at one point, you know, you could jump out of a moving vehicle at 60 miles an hour and we would be fine, but a natural would kind of be like, we would hear, you know, it's that kind of thing. So the earth strongers, they call them, so earth strong, have to wear these kind of cages, which in my head are like almost suit of armour, but kind of cool suit of armour. So they have to wear these when they're around naturals, because even if they bumped into them, because they're so strong, it would basically be like a polar bear bumping into you.
Okay.
You'd be way across the room.
So I'm imagining suit of armour but padded with pillows. Like,
I think what happens is the suit of armour kind of controls, not controls them, but kind of makes them not,
oh, so it's like robotic.
Yes, it kind of, I don't know what the word is, but it kind of makes them not as strong, so they wouldn't be able to just kind of do that. So when they're working, or there are places where naturals are not, they can take the cage off, they're strong, they can do what they need to do, but if they're, you know, going home or whatever, they have to put these I kind of think of it as like a skeleton more than a full set of armor. But it kind of just it kind of makes them not move about as much and things like that. So he works in this, basically. Now remember, he's a dancer by trade, but he works in this factory, and they're making stuff to help with the terraforming, to help make things happen. The bit you like about it is the politics. So obviously there are, you know, people who have been there seven generations, basically, and they've adapted, they've evolved. The society have, like, you only have a 5-year marriage. You're only signed in a contract for 5 years, basically. And it stopped quite a lot of abuse and things like that, because nobody owns another person for life. You know, it's kind of, you know, they've legislated and did things that kind of, like in your story, now makes Earth humans seem almost barbaric. But one side of the kind of political thing is still like, well, we're here to terraform this planet so that the Earth people can come in. You know, it's all very nice that we've got our whole, you know, whereas the other side is like, but now we've evolved, now we're almost a species in ourselves, and we should have, but they're in control. The Earth Strongers are just there to kind of do the work. And then it's also a love story, because one of the senators and January kind of come to agreement, and, you know, it's very much a story though of good people doing bad things and bad people doing good things, and what you see and what others see. So the Earth people are kind of slightly scared of the very tall, willowy, almost elf-like ethereal creatures because they're so tall. You know, there's a scene where a child kind of sees them for the first time and is terrified because they're so tall. But the naturals are terrified of the humans because they're so strong, you know, they don't know their own strength.
Right.
And it's kind of seen both sides of
it.
One of the best things is, though, that the technology is so advanced, you know, and they're always improving it to try and get, you know, this planet to be, you know, hospitable to us. But there's mammoths. But so basically they bought, when they were terraforming, some like samples of different things with them. And one of them was mammoths.
Of course. Yes. Why not?
But because the mammoths have evolved at the same time, the mammoths are not even as big as we see David Attenborough telling us the mammoths are big. Mammoths are like huge, absolutely massive. But one of the things that they're researching, and Gail, who is like who we're kind of rooting for, is does like research into speech. She's very much language orientated, which I think you would like as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And they have this thing called a halo, and it doesn't interpret like speech, but it visually kind of shows you things. Basically, they can talk to the mammoths, and it's fascinating to see how Natasha's made. Basically, their language is on two levels. So the loud level is what they would want to shout to the herd 20 miles away, and the lower level is what they would say.
Cool.
But they both happen at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's basically they have to kind of work out what's what. It's fascinating. She's really done it very well.
Yeah, and I love this, you know, like what I said about scientists having to take these imaginative leaps. It's almost like arm in arm with artists.
Mm-hmm.
Like what she, obviously she's drawn on a little bit of science and imagined what the future would look like. But then one leads to the other. Like it's sort of this relationship that feeds into each other in such a fascinating way, because I'm sure scientists are inspired by artists and artists are inspired by scientists, and they're creating this kind of world that would have seemed unimaginable. Like for, like, you know, you said Hitchhiker's Guide. He, unfortunately, Douglas Adams died before like smartphones and like tablets and things became this ever-present technology. But he'd written about, like, that's what the Hitchhiker's Guide was. Like, it wasn't a book, it was a tablet. So he'd already envisioned this. He was also, like, into science. He was a geek. But, you know, how it's, like, how you... It's not just, you can't just have a world. Like, he was a dancer. But, you know, you need the arts. Like, you need the artists, like, a different kind of art. And the scientists. Like, no one is better than the other.
Well, at one point, he does say, so he gets to... It's kind of like a... you know, princess Cinderella type thing, that he goes to the big castle and he's allowed to take the cage off occasionally. The thing is, it's all social media as well, so Gail wants everything recorded, so it's like a reality TV show, and the people in charge of that love that, because, you know, they've got this, what they think of as a lump of human, you know, who's actually a dancer. And there's one point where he's told, you know, go into this room and, you know, dance. He's not been allowed to do that for 2 years because he's not had the space.
Right.
He's not had, you know, he's not been able to take his cage off and do that. And so he dances, and, you know, being a dancer, any kind of dancer, but a ballet dancer, you need a lot of strength. Although you think of ballet dancers as being quite willowy and things like that, they need a lot of strength to do the lifts and things. So he does all this, you know, and some people are slightly scared because it shows just how strong he can be. But he says at one point, he says, for 2 years, basically, he's went to work in his cool home. He's went to work in his cool home. He's had no art, no books to read, nothing like that. You know, it's just been like trudge.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says, you actually need that.
Yeah.
You know, at one point, the designer designs his clothes, and they design it around this cage thing. And but the linens are old masters, art.
Oh, I love you.
I can't remember some of the artists they say, and obviously some of them we've not heard of yet because it's slightly different.
In the future.
But, you know, on the outside the clothes are quite plain, they match anything else, but the lining is like these beautiful, I imagine, you know, maybe like all these beautiful watercolours that you see, you know, underneath, all that kind of stuff. And he remembers that, you know, the humans haven't had that for a long time. And that you need both. You need the art and you need the kind of science stuff.
Like, I think that's what, for me, that's what human or humanity is predicated on, because it's been around for, like, since we were, you know, in caves.
Yeah, and exactly.
Like, art has always, there's never been a differentiation between,
no.
Like, I'm sure scientists also love art and arts, you know, like, use different sciences, like, even painting and writing,
exactly.
It's all technology informing art.
Exactly.
So, oh, I love it. I for sure want to read it. I love the sound of that.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. But, however, I could go on for another 20 minutes,
yes.
But I see the time now, so we might have to move on.
I don't know if B is happy, but I am for sure thrilled with all four books.
Absolutely.
So, do you know what our theme is going to be next?
Yes, next time it is lucky numbers.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So, it's numerical. I guess I couldn't, like, pushed the universe in your hand.
Yeah. Well, just come back next time and speak about the books again, because
yes.
They would fit in there. But no, she wants something different.
Okay.
She's kind of growling. She wants,
you know, I'm really scared of numbers, so I don't know if they will be lucky for me. I'm very scared of math. I don't know if there's a Christoph Galford in the world who would make science or maths accessible to
that
me.
Sounds like homework. That sounds like something you have to research.
Let's find out. But thank you so much for listening. I hope you found one or maybe four books that you want to try out. But yes, we'll see you again next time.
Bye
bye.